You drive a number two Reese draw tight Ford Mustang. Brad put on quite a clinic out there today. Second win of the season, second win here at Martinsville. Talk about those 500 laps.
Yeah, it was a good day. It was a real good day. I think the stats maybe look a little bit more dominant than I think it really was. I thought Chase was probably the best car most of the day today, and he passed me there with 150 or so to go, and thought that might be the end of our day, but I was able to learn a few things from him and kind of dissect his strengths and weaknesses and make some adjustments of our own and come back out and, be a little bit better for it. Pit crew did an excellent job gaining or retaining our track position all day, which is critical here at this racetrack. I feel like last fall we were probably even a little faster than we were today, and we lost some spots on that last stop and it cost us the win. Where today it was the opposite of that. We were able to keep our track position, and that was so key to being able to win today, because I think Chase, if he'd have been out front that run, he'd have drove away from the field with what I saw from his car. But overall, good day. We really needed this, especially for Reese and Drawtight, who are on our car for two races. We're fighting so hard to keep sponsors on our car, and we have some gaps to fill there. And so when we have those and we win with some of those partners, that's a really big deal for us. So we're working very hard on that, and I'm proud of them and happy for those guys. I'm just happy for Ford as well. The Mustang is one of those things. I think we started the season with a lot of question marks and a lot of people, asking how the car would come out. And I felt really confident based off of some of the things I'd seen on the engineering side before the season started that the car would come out and be very strong. But you just don't know until you get on the racetrack. And with the kind of the curveball in the development cycle of the 2019 rules package, there were some big question marks, and I would say right now it's passing with flying colors. So big day for Ford, big day for our sponsors, Reese and Drawtight, big day for me personally to win twice here at Martinsville. It's a track that I feel like we probably could have won like eight races here. So it's almost a little embarrassing to me to only have won twice, but I'm still very proud of today and glad to come home the winner.
Thank you very much. We're going to open up for media questions.
Should I shorten that up?
No, good stuff. That was really good. We're going to open up over here with Davey.
Davey Siegel with Front Stretch. Brad, you led over 380 laps a few years ago at Richmond. Did this one feel any different, similar? And if you could compare the two, which one was
more fun? Yeah, it felt very similar. I remember that entire race thinking that Jeff was probably the best car, but in our pick, we had the track position, and I was able to find a lane to hold Jeff off. And, I remember that race very specifically. Maybe we were probably better on the short run that race and worse on the long run, where today we were better on the long run and worse on the short run. But other than that, it was a really good day. I feel bad I didn't lead the other 50 or 60 laps, but I can't be greedy. Well, I can, but.
Mark. Mark Garrow, PRN. Brad, the way this team has started the year, we've had a lot of different style racetracks now. We're now moving into the short track season. Doesn't appear that your team or the Penske organization has a weak link as far as racetracks right now. Do you feel like you guys are going to be like this all season long, strong at whatever racetrack gets thrown at you?
I just, I don't think it's settled in. Mark, I think that we're still very early in the season with, brand new rules, brand new tech officials. I don't think we'll see the field really settle in until about Kansas. I think I said that at the start of the year, and I'm holding firm with that. We're on the West Coast for 3 weeks where it's not impossible, but it's damn near impossible to make engineering advancements on your cars with some of the things you learn. And then, of course, there's always new pit crew members at the start of the year who are learning how to gel together. So I think it's way too early in the season to pick those things out. But that doesn't mean I'm complaining about our success. It's good. This is good. We need those playoff points, I think we missed the cutoff last year in the playoffs by 10, 11 points. So, today alone, I think we got 7 playoff points. And with our win at Atlanta, that was another 5. So, those are 12 key playoff points that, are really critical come championship time. Nonetheless, just the fun of winning today in Martinsville. So those are big things that we don't know how important those are going to be come the fall time, but I think you have to assume you're going to need them, and so it's big to get these wins.
Matt Weaver, Auto Week. Given how important track positions seem, that if you didn't make the move up front within the first 5 to 10 laps, settle down for a little bit, did you expect a harder shove from Chase? He got into you in 3 and 4 early in the run.
Yeah.
And then late in the run, he moved up the track. How much were you aware of what he was doing, and what was your plan to kind of mitigate that?
Yeah, my spotter kept me pretty aware. There wasn't much I could honestly do. You know, I could say when you got behind cars, you definitely lost speed. And it's not like you didn't lose speed before, but maybe a little bit more speed than you would normally lose. Being the leader, you know, obviously have to use that to your advantage. But once the field kind of catches up, you know, to the lap cars, then everybody's fighting the same air, and that can be an interesting time. But certainly, I thought Chase did a great job. He raced as hard as he could, and you know, just was able to pull the right moves to hold him back. No problem, Matt.
Nate Ryan, NBC Sports. Brad, the fighting to get those sponsors on the car, do you know how many races you're currently trying to fill this year?
I think we're okay for this year, but I know that we have some things to work on for next year.
And the sponsor that you have on your hat, I think this is one of your truck sponsors,
yep.
I guess.
Yep.
So are you hopeful? Are they on the car more often this year? Are there others that are on the car?
We have one more race with them this fall. I wanted to say Richmond in the fall, but I'm not sure of that.
Have you had to get more personally involved? I mean, knowing that you have relationships with these companies from the truck series, and you know, does a win like this sort of help you
next year? The wins are huge. You have to win. The market loves winners, and as it should. You know, that's what you'd like it to be. You'd like it to be about winning and sponsors that are connected to that. I think that's, in my mind, that's the way it should be. And it's not always the way it is, but, I didn't come into this sport with, you know, a name that was just going to, you know, give me sponsors or the biggest sponsors, you know, out the gate, you know. So with that in mind, our team has to win. And Roger's great because he's so smart with these, you know, business-to-business deals and things like that. But even that, that's really hard on him. And he doesn't deserve that full burden. He's worked his butt off, and he shouldn't have to be in every board meeting and trying to solidify the deals. And I recognize that for him. And I'm proud of the efforts that he does put in. And the last thing I want to do is make him do more of them, right? So with that in mind, I hope that we can, continue to attract the high-level sponsors we need to be competitive at this level. And the best way I know how to do that is wins like today.
So are you involved in more of those board meetings?
More than I'd like to be. It'd be a lot easier to just be the race car driver, but I accept the fact that, if we want to have the funding we need to be able to compete with, the Toyotas specifically, who are certainly very high up on the funding level, we have to generate those revenues and those funds, and that's the way we're going to get back to victory lane, because you need that to be able to afford the engineering, to be able to afford the pit crew, and still pay me to drive. So winning's very, very important.
Tim Southers, motorsport.com. Brad, you talked about gelling with new crew members. You've got a new spotter in Coleman Presley.
Yes.
You guys have really hit it off. And a lot of times, spotters and drivers, seems like there's a communication bridge you have to get across to get familiar with one another. Seems like y'all have hit the ground running. Talk about that a little bit. And does Coleman, being a former racer, help you any with that?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like Coleman was going to do pretty well to start the year. And I think he has. He's done really well. I think we can always be better no matter what the scenario is, but he did a superb job today, and his efforts were instrumental as well for us to be able to win. So I'm happy for him.
Mike Massey with frontstretch.com. Brad, what's it like racing a guy for the win who, if he moves you for the win, the fans are going to go crazy and say it's great racing. And if you move him, then you're a dirty driver and get booed out of the place.
What's that like? Well, no one said life was going to be fair. I remember that's what my mom told me when I was growing up. It just is what it is. So you make the most of your opportunities. You try to be thankful for the ones that you do have, and you try to move past the ones that you don't have any control over.
We're going to check up with the press box. Do we have any questions in the press box for Brad? All right, we're going to come back down here. We're going to go to the back of the room. We've got three or four. We're going to start with Jacob and move through the crowd.
Jacob Seelman, Speed Sport. Brad, so up until Chase bumped you out of the way and took the lead, you actually had a shot at Fred Lorenzen's record for most laps led in a single cup race here at Martinsville. I know people say this is, you know, this
what
is...
What was that, do you know?
493 of 500.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Up until Woo! That point, you had a shot at 495. I mean, short track racing is a lot of rough and tumble, but... What goes into a dominant day like this? I mean, it just looked like nobody could touch you besides maybe the 9.
Yeah, well, the 9 was definitely faster, like I said, but just overall team effort, ability to adjust, adapt, and keep up with a track that's changing. You know, pit road, spotter, driver, crew chief, and all that stuff. It all comes together, and it's a special feeling when it does. It really is a team sport. I get, you know, probably 90% of the glory on days like today, but sometimes I feel like I only do 10% of the work. But and that's okay. You know, it's no different than an NFL team gives all the credit to the quarterback, and, you know, there's 40-some other players on the team, but it's just part of it, and I'm glad to have the opportunity.
Go for it. Peter Strada, TSJ Sports. Brad, have you ever had a car as strong as you had today?
Yeah, I feel like our car in the – fall of last year was stronger than this, and you know, we got penalties and things of that nature, and then it had a bad stop at the end of the race, and all that came together, and we finished fourth. That's part of how it goes sometimes.
We'll go in the back on the side of the room there.
Right here. Yeah, I just moved over. Christian Coley, the Motorsports News Source. Fox kind of alluded that, you know, it takes a while to get the click at Martinsville. Two wins under your belt now. What's really clicked with the number two team at Martinsville?
I mean, like I was saying earlier, I think when we opened, I feel like we probably should have won 7 or 8 races here, especially out of the last 6. I think our team has really hit on a setup that I'm happy with. Very small changes to it. The rules haven't changed much. Obviously, it requires adjustments, you know, with the small car changes that were this year. But they've been able to put together a car that really suits my driving style, and I've been able to really tune that driving style in. I don't feel like until probably 2015 we had cars to win here. And I felt like since 2015 we've had the car to beat here or been in the top 2 or 3, and then it's just a matter of execution, pit roads, penalties, restarts, things of that nature. So... some of those things have gone our way. Some of those things haven't, and I'm thankful today went our way.
Jonathan Merriman,
NASCAR.com. Brad, 2 years ago in the fall, Chase moved you out of the way in what we thought could be a win for him. That was overshadowed a little bit when Denny moved him. How long is your memory in terms of that, and how hell-bent were you on making sure that didn't happen again?
I can't say I put a lot of thought into it until probably the last lap. I just wanted to make sure I was far enough ahead, and thankfully we were. But, I mean, you don't forget about it, but I also don't dwell on it either.
Camden Leesenby for RubbingsRacing.com.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah. So with the added downforce and reduced horsepower at other tracks, does it mean more for you to win at a driver's track this year than it maybe did in the past?
Yeah, you know, this track still has the more horsepower. You know, it has the splitter and the spoiler and the yada, yada, yadas. But, you know, I think from a horsepower standpoint, there hasn't been any change there. And this track just is always going to mean more, going back to the history and legacy of our sport. You know, I always struggle with defining what's a driver's track and what isn't a driver's track. That seems to be maybe used a little bit more conveniently, depending on who's winning. you know, when you win a race, you get out of the car and say, "This is a driver's track." You know, of course. And then vice versa, it seems to be when a driver wins what was normally a driver's track, who's maybe not considered one of the best drivers, then it's, "Oh, his car was great all day." So, you know, I guess maybe I have a hard time. They're all in some way a driver's track. Some more than others, and this one has some unique flavors to it. I always tell people that being a cup driver to me kind of feels like being like a Deion Sanders or some kind of football player like that. because even though the field stays the same, the game stays the same, when we go to different tracks, it's like lining up in different positions on a football team. It's like lining up as a kick returner or a cornerback or sometimes even a quarterback or wide receiver. And you guys are really loud over there. Sorry, I couldn't help. That was really distracting. And with that in mind, what happens is you have to be good at all these different skill sets to be able to win in all the different tracks. So what makes a great wide receiver or cornerback or quarterback doesn't necessarily make a great athlete. It's the ability to be versatile and play multiple positions that's really, really impressive. And to be able to win on all the different genres of racetracks, to me, requires some unique disciplines. And so it's something I take a lot of pride in. It's part of what irks me that I haven't won on a road course, and I think I've finished second or third like 5 or 6 times at least. But I feel like we've been really close. I want to be able to win at every racetrack because I think if you're going to define a great driver, great drivers in the sport win on all the different genres of tracks. And I don't really get caught up in such and such as a driver's track as much as I would say that I get caught up in can you win at every type of racetrack. That, to me, defines a great driver in this sport. No problem.
We are going to try the press box again. Press box, do you have a question?
Can you hear me now?
We can.
All right.
Hey, we're back. Here we go. I do have one. Mr. Chris Knight. Here we go.
Yeah, Chris Knight, catchfence.com. Actually, this is coming from Jerry Jordan at Coda. So
oh, okay.
He's on at Coda.
Jerry he has to be here to get a question.
Next question.
That should definitely be a policy.
He wants to know, he said earlier this year that you scoffed at the media when they asked you about the possibility of Mustang struggling in 2019. He said that you scoffed at the media when they asked about the Mustangs performing better. He wants to know what you saw or what you knew that others didn't that made you believe the Mustangs would be fast out of the box.
Towards the fall last year, I sat in the wind tunnel with the team and watched them work on the car for it would probably been the last 2 or 3 months of the year and spent time talking to them about what I specifically thought the car should be. And then saw the numbers compared to the Ford Fusion, and I knew they were exactly what I felt like we needed to be successful this year. So, I felt really confident when Tommy Joseph, who runs the Ford Performance Development Team, was able to put that to work, and John Maloney, who runs the Penske Technology Group. I felt really confident when I saw them kind of kind of acknowledge the things that our team was asking for and put them together. Seems like when the Ford Fusion came out in 2013, there wasn't a lot of real, there wasn't as much teamwork building that car. And I thought that car didn't come out the gate as well as it should have. And the Mustang had a lot of teamwork between Ford Performance and the teams, all the way down to the driver and crew chief level, that I thought was really cool to see. I thought they had some sound engineering, some sound practices, and felt really good about it accordingly.
I believe we have one more question from somebody actually in the press box.
I do. Hang on 1 second. Here we go.
That's a zinger. Do you get a zing?
Yeah, Reed Spencer with the NASCAR Wire, and I am indeed actually here.
You're not phone? This isn't a phone call? I can't see you.
No. It's coming from on high, though.
Okay.
But at any rate, Brad, was it a blessing in disguise that Chase got by you on lap 325 and you were able to follow him for a while and study where he was good?
I'm a little bit. You hate to say being passed is a blessing, but he was definitely faster and definitely learned some things from it. There's no doubt. He was super strong. He was in a great spot today to win the race and to make something happen, and we were just able to kind of hold him off.
All right, we're going to come back downstairs and go Caleb, Bob, and Kelly.
Caleb Whistler, KickingTheTires.net. Last year, your team kind of peaked at the right time going into the playoffs. This year, you guys are kind of peaking early. How do you keep your team from not becoming complacent over the next few races as the playoffs approach?
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Caleb.
Caleb. I think about that every day. Every day I wake up in the morning and say, am I better today than I was yesterday? And if I'm not, and if we're not, we're going to lose. That's the simple matter of this. The sport's very dynamic. Technology is changing every day. Somewhere out there right now, someone is working on the next advancement that's going to be critical to winning the playoffs. And we don't know about it. Might be another team. Might be someone in our own group. If we stay stagnant, it's guaranteed we will fall. So I think about it every day. I wish I had a great answer. The only thing I know to do is just be super annoying. That's really all I know. All I know is to go in and sit in meetings and ask questions that make people squirm and watch them squirm and watch their face. And when they squirm, are they squirming because they should be squirming, or are they squirming because they just don't want to work? And that's all I know. I wish I was smarter than that. I wish I was better than that. But all I know how to do is, you know, read their body language, Caleb, and see if they got more than I think they got, or if this is all we got, and push those people. So it's a really tough question. It's a really tough thing to do. I would rather it be a lot simpler than that, and I just have the fastest car and not have to worry about it. But that's not how it's been for me, at least in my career. And that's okay. It means I take more pride when we do win, and I feel like that's a good thing.
Come up to Bob.
Bob Pockrass, Fox Sports. Yesterday, you seemed very relaxed in here. Did you have any sort of sense that today could be this good?
Yeah, I knew when we qualified third that we were going to be really tough to beat. And then I saw this morning that you picked me to win the race in the tweet up, and I walked out on the grid like this. And then I just saw that Nate Ryan picked me to win. You two are smart. Fox and NBC leading the charge over here.
Kelly, that's fine.
I felt pretty good about it. Yeah, I mean, you know what's sometimes, you know what's strange is I honestly thought this is maybe, if I don't know if this makes you feel better or makes me feel dumber. I honestly thought going into the race that the 9 car wasn't going to be very good. I kind of had my own little cheat sheet cars of who to watch for. And I had the 9 car rode off, and I was wrong on that one. I don't know if that makes you feel any better. He was probably the best car out there, so you win some, you lose some, Bob.
Kelly Crandall, Racer.com. So, Brad, going back, you said you wanted to win on every genre of racetrack. I don't really feel like you're a guy who's really been all that out there about personal milestones and achievements mm-hmm. of what you want other mm-hmm. than a second championship to validate to first. So what are some of the things other than winning on racetracks that you want to put on your personal resume that you feel would fill out your resume other than just X number of wins?
I had some big ones. You know, I think starting last year it was I wanted to win, you know, some of the big races, and I'd never won the Southern 500, never won the Brickyard. So it was nice to win those. I think looking at that was a nice milestone for me personally and for our team. You know, I would like to hit the 30 win mark before the season's over, which looks like we got a great shot at that. I think I look at a few markers for the Hall of Fame, and one of the markers to me as a Cup driver is probably that 30 win mark. Championship is one of them. Kind of add the 30 win mark in there, and I think that's kind of, you're there. You know what I mean? I think anyone who has 30 wins in the Cup level is going to eventually be in the Hall of Fame. So that's a good mark for me. Winning at my home track and winning the Daytona 500, those are two milestone marks for me that we haven't hit, along with the road course. All of those we've been really close, and it hasn't come together. So those are probably the biggest ones on my mind. Thanks, Kelly.
Mike Neff from frontstretch.com. Brad, we talked to Paul about it a little bit ago when he was in here. He brought up that they've taken away the track bar adjuster. And yeah. I asked him if he felt, does that bring more driver ability into it than it used to have with the adjuster?
Okay.
Because you now have to kind of make up for some of the deficiencies that you used to be able to use the adjuster for as a crutch.
Sometimes I think yes, sometimes I think no. I thought before it was easier to play defense with the track bar adjuster because you could make your car – you could tune your car to be good middle to end of a run and then come back and trim it with the track bar adjuster for the short run, which prevented some comers and goers. So I think in general it was a really good move to get rid of that. At least that's what I saw a lot, especially here. I feel like if we had – you know, probably last year's rules here, you would have seen a lot more comers and goers because of that. with the bigger spoiler and the splitter, that kind of neutralized the track bar adjuster. But in general, I think that was a big change.
All right, we have two more questions. Mark Garrow, and we're going to wrap up with Daniel.
Mark Garrow again with PRN. Brad, given this is, you know, with this package, what do you foresee for Bristol now, speed-wise, competition-wise, being able to pass at those kind of higher speeds? You guys have talked before we got here about, you know, some of the speeds maybe being insane, I think, are some of the words or adjectives that were used for Bristol. What do you see happening now that you've got a taste of this package?
Pretty much exactly what I thought. You know, the cars are going to be extremely fast. We're going to have a very difficult time keeping the tires on them. The weather will make a big difference. If it's cool, it'll be hard for the track to take rubber. And we'll probably see a lot of tire failures. Just the cars are going to be so, so fast at Bristol. And to run 500 miles, or 500 laps, I should say, at those speeds, it'll be kind of like World Outlaws, but a 500-lap race. Very, very fast. You know, normal racetracks, I think we pull 2.5 to 3 Gs. Bristol is always a step up. With these rules, I'm expecting it to be 3.5 to 4 Gs, which is just going to completely rip your arms apart. And if you're ripping your arms apart, you're ripping your car apart at the same time. The cars are kind of made to fit the driver, so... if the driver's getting worn out, the car's right there with it. So we've had a lot of discussions and conversations about probably needing to build a special car for that race. But being that we're in a spot where we won two races, I don't think we'll probably do that. We'll probably just run the race and try to survive. But it'll be a big, big test for the teams and for the drivers for Goodyear because the pace – should be somewhat outlandish.
Daniel, bring us home.
Dale McFadden with NBC Sports. Do you have a spot chosen for where this grandfather clock is going to go?
I'm in negotiations, Daniel.
With who?
negotiations. So I had this conversation with my daughter before we got here because she helps me wind the clock. I do have one clock, and it's in our house. And she loves to help me wind it. It's one of, you know, when you have a three-year-old, you get joy out of little things. And she's gone from not being able to turn the handle, and I would have to hold her hand and, you know, kind of like guide it to crank it, to now at three, she puts her hand in and, you know, like as fast as she can go. And she thinks it's so cool. It's like one of those senses of accomplishment. And so we do that, you know, probably once a week together. And I told her this week when we were winding the clock from 2017, I guess, I told her, you know, if we win this week, we'll get another clock. And she's just getting old enough to understand those things. And so when we won, I told her, remember I was telling you if we won, we got a new clock? And she said, well, where are we going to put it, Daddy? And I said, well, I was thinking right in your bedroom. And she did not like that idea. So we're gonna work on our negotiations. I think because the one I have at the house chimes. I got the chime turned on, and I don't think she wants the chime in her bedroom. But it's a good problem to have. Those are winning problems. Those are winning problems. But I can tell you we'll do something special with it, and I'll cherish and enjoy it forever. I'm not going to put it in a box in storage. I can promise you that.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Brad. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Good luck with your negotiations.